And
you're afraid to come on.
We know you're nervous about going on the radio, but that we just wanted to say hi. You were here that tragic day a year ago too, and we just wanted to say thanks for coming by.
Thank you for coming by.
And all the people, would you please tell all the people outside, for whatever reason, the gates are not open.
Still a heightened security down here at the Pentagon. There, it will be, the way I understand it, for the next few days around the country. I think we're still going to be on. I don't know if it's going to be an orange alert, but it is going to be an alert status that we have for the next few days.
I'll make sure you tell all the people for the Pentagon who are out there outside those gates that we are thinking of them.
Well, while I was waiting for the wonderful Rob Spiewak to come and get me, about 20 people came by wanting to come in and see you guys.
Well, so if anybody is in here, bring them on up to say hello. We'd love to say hi.
You got a lot of fans here in the Pentagon. We appreciate you being here.
Well, we appreciate the work you do.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tina.
We have one of the dueling sergeants that's here right now. And
he was my choice, incidentally, in the fist fight.
In the fist fight. Grab a microphone, Sergeant Ed Bonilla. Sergeant First Class Ed Bonilla. He's from Dumfries.
Celebrity he most resembles, Mike, is Joey Pants.
Pantanantonio or whatever.
From the Sopranos.
Actually, you know how I've been told.
A little closer to the mic there, Ed.
You know Sarge. How I've been told that I resemble.
Who?
You remember the old boxer from Mexico, Cesar Chavez.
Yeah, there you
yeah,
are.
Absolutely. Just a little bit.
You were here, Sergeant Bonilla, a year ago. Your office was partially destroyed by the impact. You're about 70 yards. Your office was located about 70 yards from where the plane hit a year ago today. And it has to mean a lot to you, the observance, and just reflecting on this tragedy today.
Yes, it does. First of all, let me say that I'm honored to be part of your show this afternoon. And I'm very glad, as everybody else here is, to see you guys here. I mean, it's really a true honor to have you guys here, a radio station that can be heard nationwide.
And will you stop it? Because it is an honor for us to be asked to be here with you guys. Because it really focused to... As Sergeant, if you could tell us... Where were you when it happened?
I sure can.
What did you do? How did you react? You know, we were talking to the officer
Isaac Ho'opi,
who just said that he had the training just come to him and he just acted That's without right. thinking. Tell us what happened with you and what you went through.
Well, we were sitting in my office, myself and a couple of co-workers, and we were talking over about the attacks in New York. And as it turns out, you know, I had this really gut feeling that something was not right and something could also happen here. So I mentioned to one of my co-workers, I said, you know, the very same thing that happened in New York could happen here. The guy's standing right in front of me. I'm sitting in front of my desk and my computer, and he's like, man, this is the safest place in D.C. It'll never happen here. Well, Don, no more than 5 minutes, we hear this loud whistle and this horrific sound.
Oh.
And the impact immediately threw us to the ground. And I can remember, you know, my two co-workers are... The smallest one is 6'2". Big guys. The other one's 6'3", 6'4". I've never seen them so scared in their life. You know, they were on the ground. We're all looking at each other. We're looking up and we're like, what the?
Yeah, right.
As we're on the ground, I'm looking to the back of my office, and I see all this computer equipment fly in the air. Part of the walls went down more than a 45-degree angle. Luckily enough that our wall next to my desk didn't go down. My immediate reaction, as the officer said before, was, hey, I want to make sure everybody's okay.
Did you know as soon as it happened, did you have a pretty reasonable idea that it had been another plane going into the building? You were already aware of the World Trade Center and what had happened up in New York. So you knew immediately?
I knew, Mike.
Yeah.
It was too coincidental not to be.
Mm-hmm. Do you get worried now? When you see, even this morning during the ceremonies, the planes from Reagan National still fly directly over the Pentagon. I mean, there's planes flying over now.
Absolutely.
Commercial flights. Do you worry about that?
Any of us, anybody that works in this building that was here that day, it's an automatic instinct. Any plane that's flying above us, you look up and you're like, oh, my God, you know. can it happen again?
Ken, tell us about, there's so many stories you hear. You don't hear them all. The personal experiences with the hero stories, then the acts of bravery that you witnessed yourself. You couldn't have avoided that on a day like that.
Oh, absolutely not. Well, when we, when we were on the floor and we immediately got up and we went outside, well, we went through the hallway. The first thing that I noticed to the left of my hallway was the impact. All I could see was this thick black cloud of smoke approaching us very rapidly. Across the hall from us, an office that had maybe about 40 to 45 desks, people just screaming, coming out of the hallways, running, just going crazy.
Now, in a situation like that, I know you are. There are civilians that work in the Pentagon, lots of civilians, but also lots of military types. The military types, the Pentagon police force, you guys had to have been trained for an eventuality like this. Did you deal with regular Joes like Mike and I, the GSers, who were going out of their minds, and did you have to deal with civilians to say, calm down, we know what we're doing, or because the picture I have in my mind, and tell me if I'm wrong, is that you at least maybe had the upper hand because you thought it might happen. But
and there's training involved.
You had training. You're here with, I don't know what the ratio of military to civilian is, but
there's more civilians.
Yeah, there's more of us than there are of you.
Correct.
And if this happens, and as you mentioned, you walk into an office and there are 45 people going crazy, your first instinct from your training has to be to calm those people down. Did you do that?
I did not do that. It was pretty much everybody was running. It was instinct. You knew you couldn't go to your right because the smoke was coming in. Everybody was just trying to go as fast as possible. There were people walking in canes. Someone was walking. Somebody had a wheelchair. It was just people. There were a lot of people, Mike and Don, that didn't know what was going on. They hadn't heard about the New York incidents or attacks. So we were just trying to talk. There was a lot of us just saying, hey, we just got to make it to the exit. Try to go as fast as you can, but calmly.
You hear a lot of talk about nobody wrote the rule book for the protocol in a situation like that. People pulled together pretty quickly, though, once the magnitude of the tragedy was known.
They did. It was incredible. The minute people walked out, again, you would see people carrying other people out, people that had canes or whatnot. Everybody just came together. And then, once we were out of the building, there were people, especially the military, just running towards the site of the impact. Another thing that the security were doing and some of the military were yelling and calling out if there were any medics or any doctors or anybody that had any sort of experience, with medical assistance.
You look back at it now and you say it was a year ago, and of course everybody knows where we were when it happened, but you being here when it happened, how spooky was today for you, and do you think that next year it'll be remembered as much as it is this year? Or will it be something that eventually fades into our we'll never forget? But, I'm thinking, I was reading, here's my point, I was reading something that Eleanor Roosevelt wrote in 1942, 1 year after Pearl Harbor. She wrote a regular newspaper column. I was reading this online today, and she wrote, America needs to get back to work. Of course, at that time, we were knee-deep in WW2.
Right.
She didn't want Pearl Harbor Day celebrated or observed. She wanted America to get back to work. Well, we don't have a fight like World War II now. So here's the point of a long-winded question. How are you feeling today? And next year, do you think America will react the same way?
Or do we need to react the same way? Or did we take care of it today?
Thank you, Mike. That's the perfect follow-up.
And I can only tell you my own personal opinion. I feel that this was the just thing to do. A year, we're showing everyone in the world that we are back at work, that we are back in business, that we have rebuilt the Pentagon. Next year, we'll remember everyone in our hearts and in our minds.
Is that your answer?
We'll keep working.
And about the work with the Pentagon, now I'm talking to people and my head is spinning with the details they were giving me. I'm hearing that one of these window panes weighs 2 tons. One of these panes of window that we're looking at weighs 2 tons. And did Mike fall down again?
No, I didn't. That was something else.
That one of the panes got blown all the way from the side of the building way back over here, back to where the TV trucks are, roughly half a mile. When you think about a window weighing 2 tons, how many windows are in the Pentagon? And that just illustrates the force of the power that this plane had coming.
You got to be aware, those of you that work in the Pentagon, both military and civilian, you do have to be aware, and I would imagine pretty grateful to these guys that came in here and rebuilt this thing in less than a year.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you would have to go in there and actually compare what that side of the building looked like before and what it looks like now. For the first time in 1 year, I was on the side of the Pentagon where the plane struck. I went in there today for the first time, and it was very emotional for me because...
So this was the first time you actually were in there?
This was the first time in that part of the building.
Right.
That part of the building. In fact, I went with a close friend of mine who was burnt 75% of his body during the attack, and we went into his office where he was extracted during the attack. And I was able to touch the windows and to feel how tough they are compared to the ones that were a year ago. And just the structure of the building itself. It's amazing.
How is the morale? You can speak, you're an Army guy. From the Army standpoint, how is the morale now, 1 year later?
Very high.
Very high.
Very high.
Are we ready to kick some ass? I mean,
absolutely. We've been ready.
Glad to hear that.
We were ready the next day.
Glad to hear that. Mike and I were talking that when the president was speaking today,
I was so pleased with what he had to say.
That was a big point of what he was saying as well.
When he got up today, and I think he surprised a few people because when you're dealing with a memorial service, really, an observance, they don't want to call it a memorial service. It's an observance of the tragedy of a year ago. You reflect back and you mention the people, and rightly so, that were lost. What the president did today, and what I was surprised by and delighted to hear, was really more of a position of strength that we are going to continue this fight. We are going to continue to rally the troops, and that's what we needed to hear. And I'm delighted to hear the president say those words, and I'm sure that it was a perfect place for him to do that here at the center of military operations for the United States.
You're correct. I've been in the Army 20 years now. And in 20 years, of the different presidents that we've had, I've never heard of any president, since I've been in the military, talk about their military servicemen as he has.
That's great. And what does that do for morale with you and the other guys that you work with? Tell us about what that means emotionally when you know the president is behind you. And not to slight any previous presidents, but
exactly.
This president right now and what you heard today, can you tell us what it means? I mean, can you verbalize what it means for you and the other guys to hear that?
Mike, he's doing more than talking. Our pay has increased in the last year. And they're talking about other pay raises. He knows that he relies on the servicemen, on the military, to protect this country and all our allies. So by that I say that all of our fellow soldiers and airmen, Marines, Navy, Coast Guard, they're all behind us.
All right, well, we've been talking to Sergeant Ed Bonilla, who was in the Pentagon, 70 yards away from the impact point. And you heard what he said, the state of morale at the Pentagon here in the military.
Kick ass.
He's strong. Ed, Sergeant, thank you so much.
Pleasure meeting you, sir.
My pleasure.
And
my pleasure.
It's great to have you.
Guys,
don't be a stranger. Come by the station anytime you want to.
You guys say hi to my other friend, Mike.
Okay, very good.
We got it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ed.
Now we have battling sergeants. We have Sergeant Chris Brayman here.
I had a chance to talk to Sergeant Brayman during the break when Buzz was doing the news, and I would say he was he has an interesting story just on his title. You are. Correct me if I'm wrong. I want to see if I got this right. You are Special Forces. No, you're not Special. Tell me what. You're a cook that's not a cook. What the heck were you telling me?
What is your job, Sarge?
You have training as a cook, but yet you're really trained to do the best kind of special ops. Is that correct?
Actually, I'm a cook for the Secretary of the Army, but I'm an Airborne Ranger cook.
An Airborne Ranger cook.
Now, wait a minute. Hold on.
Not a lot of seven-course meals prepared for the Airborne Rangers, I would imagine.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Are you a cook or are you an Army guy? what is it? Are you a cook? I look at my Sergeant Bonilla here, and you know what? Look at Sergeant Bonilla. Lean, mean, fighting machine. Are you a lean, mean, grilling machine?
Oh, look at the look he's giving you.
Yeah, all right. You're showing me all your ribbons.
There you go. Absolutely.
I received the Purple Heart and the Soldier's Medal for Valor for September 11th. I rescued 3. I ran 4 to safety, and I recovered 63 people over the course of 3.5 days.
All right, I believe our question may have just been answered.
Then
there.
You're more than a chef.
But he also mentioned to me when I was pursuing this.
And I'm just kidding you, Sarge.
And we're going to talk about the day that you were here, because you're one of the American heroes that we're talking to today. And the thing is, it just didn't go, and it didn't sound right to me that at the same time with the Airborne Rangers, but you did have training as a sous chef. Is that correct?
That's correct.
But you don't use that training very often, do you?
No, actually, when I got here at the Pentagon, I came in from 2nd 75th Ranger Battalion at Fort Lewis, Washington. I was on a seesaw team for them, combat search and rescue team, and when I got here at the Pentagon, they made me a purchasing agent because they said, what the heck am I going to do with you?
That's great.
What's your recipe for meatloaf?
Couldn't tell you.
It's classified.
Hold on, you know what? I want to ask you about that day, and you mentioned the lives that you saved. Want to hear about that? We will break now for 10 seconds for our local stations to identify themselves. We are live at the Pentagon.
This, we're Sports 1140 KHDK Sacramento, United States of America, an Infinity Broadcasting Station.
September 11th, 2002 continues. We're here with Chris Brayman, Staff Sergeant.
I'm looking at a picture here, Sergeant, and you know, this is radio. It's tough to communicate. It shows you. It looks like you're in some hazmat uniforms here, and one of you is carrying the Marine Corps flag. Is that correct? What are we looking at here? It looks like was this photograph taken on September 11th, 2001?
It was taken on Thursday.
Okay.
That flag actually came from the fourth floor from the Marine Corps corridor. To the right of it was completely destroyed where the roofs had come down, and to the left of it was this unscathed Marine Corps flag. We put Major Dan Patello inside this crane. He went up, he reached for it the first time, he missed it the second time, he grabbed it, and he came down. Major Dan Patello in the center, and Eric Jones was a young medical student on the right. He had just pulled his car over and started giving medical aid, and together, the three of us, we recovered 63 people over the course of 3.5 days.
Jesus Christ.
Incredible. After the first day, were there any survivors after the first day that you got out, or was it it was more of a recovery operation after that first day, correct?
That's correct. After September 11th, it became an automatic recovery. Because the heat was so intense inside, I got over 2,000 degrees inside, and each time I'd go in, I could feel the top of my face peel away. And the heat was so bearable, it felt like a bad sunburn that you couldn't control, and just kept getting, your skin kept getting hotter and hotter.
You know, mentioned when you first got here, you mentioned you received the Purple Heart for Valor and Purple Heart for that particular day. So you received pretty severe injuries, the actual...
What happened?
What can you tell us what happened?
Well, that morning I came in, my wife had called me and told me what was going on in New York, and I told her, not to worry, I love you. And as soon as I hung up the phone, I was thrown forward. It was like a giant earthquake. I hit the cabinet, came back down. I evacuated out. As soon as I came out, I encountered a Department of Defense police officer coming out carrying a lady and a baby. And I grabbed the baby from the officer's hands. Together we ran for about 65 yards and placed the baby back in the woman's arms. She kept saying, where's my baby, where's my baby? But it was in her arms. The officer instructed me, go get help, go get help. So I ran as fast as I could to this ambulance that was just pulling up.
as I got to the ambulance, the medic was downloading all his gear, and they were bringing a woman from behind me. I kept yelling, "I have a lady and a baby, I have a lady and a baby. I need help." And he said, "More is coming," referring to more medical personnel was coming. At that point, they placed this woman down. It was a two Department of Police officers and a colonel. They were coming from behind me carrying this this woman. She was burned from the back of her head to the back of her thighs, bright pink in color.
Oh, wow.
It was a woman who I turned my my travel orders in 1 month prior to, so I knew this woman.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't making any noise. At that point, they took off and ran back, and I ran with them. And as I ran up, I met this Lieutenant Colonel Anderson, and he kept saying, "My general didn't die on my watch, my general didn't die on my watch." At that point, I just said, "Dear Lord, give us the strength for what I'm about to do." I saw a man frozen in time in the window. He was apparently, he'd already passed away. He was in the window.
Right.
And at that point, we went into this little opening on the left-hand side of the impact area. There was a bright light that went in front of us. What it was a man on fire that hit the window and came back down. We put him out, grabbed him. As I grabbed for his sleeve, I thought it was a sleeve that came with me, but it wasn't.
Oh.
As I grabbed him, we ran him out, ran him to safety, came back. And the second time we went in, there was a woman pinned on the ground with cement in the desk. And DPS officers, again, at that point, assisted me and the colonel. We jarred her loose, got her out. Her legs were broken. She felt like she was being baked, is what she kept saying.
Right.
And we ran her to safety. We came back. At this point, there was a fireman that was catching this woman that was falling from the second floor, and she landed on top of him. This was a man that had dove underneath the fire truck at that moment when the plane had come in. And the other fireman was in the fire truck itself, and they'd already pulled him out. He doesn't remember how, he just had his rotational cup replaced. He doesn't remember how it happened.
Wow.
But we explained to him how, yeah, this woman had fallen, and he got up and carried her to safety. At that point, we were instructed not to go back in, actually ordered. This is the first time I've ever disobeyed an order. We went in anyway. There was a fire extinguisher spray behind me. Next thing you know, in the darkness, I mean, there's city dark and country dark. This was darker than country dark. It was just like one sheet. As I reached through the darkness and the clouds, I could feel the burning sensation going down my throat as it was coming through. And I reached and I grabbed this woman that was clapping her hands. She couldn't breathe. She came out. I ran her to safety. Her hands were stuck up in a burned fetal position where they're almost like a mummy.
Mm-hmm.
She had a blank stare on her face. She was covered in ash. I ran her to safety, came back. As soon as we came back, that area collapsed. We tried to work our way around. There were six propane canisters, looked like sailing torches, blown up one at a time. And we were staying well aware from those. All the noise and heat, because we're spundled into one area. Up until then, I had no idea it was a plane. We were just reacting.
And, Chris, you know, we were talking to the other sergeant and with the DPS guys. You guys are trained for all kinds of stuff. But this had to be something.
This is different.
That was different. I'm going to ask you the same thing that I asked some of the DPS guys. When you're going in there,
right,
and as you're saying, you're disobeying an order, but you're doing what's right in your heart, and you're saying, "Please, God, you know, make this right," you're going to go back in. Let me just say, no BS. What balls? I mean it. What balls? Bigger balls than I would ever have. I could never picture. I'd like to think that I'd be the type of man that could do that, but to be honest, I'm not sure that I am. How did you get the intestinal fortitude after you'd gone in once, twice, three times, four times, to keep going back, even when you are disobeying an order where they say, "Don't go in, it's not safe," you still go in?
Well, I hold all that attitude to God and country. God kept me safe and my country trained me. You know, Americans are not victims, we're survivors, and that's why, you know, I was kept going and going and going. At that point, I ended up, we worked our way around. At that point, they said 15 minutes, another plane was coming. And up until then, we didn't know it was a plane. At that point, we had, as I went around on the left-hand side of the impact area, there was a DPS officer coming out again with a a man, it was a contractor, and he was struggling coming out. To the right of him, he looked okay, but to the left of him, his left eye was severed and just hanging out from the side of his head. At that point, you know, they instructed us, 15 minutes, another plane was coming. And they pushed us all the way across the south parking for our safety. Everybody thought we had a plan. We didn't. We were just reacting. You know, and the Rangers, you never leave a fallen comrade to fall into the hands of the enemy. And that's what we're doing. We're going to get our fallen comrades at any cost. It didn't matter.
And what about your wife? You mentioned that you had been on the phone with your wife. You hang up the phone. All hell breaks loose. How was your wife when you were finally able to reach her? I can only imagine, you know, we know what you went through. We can only imagine what your wife had gone through. She hangs up the phone with you. 2 seconds later, boom, this happens. Tell us about when you called your wife and what her reaction was like, when she knew you were okay.
Well, by then, it was 1:47 in the afternoon. At this time, my adrenaline started opening up a little bit, and that's when I started noticing pieces of the plane in front of me. Letters and fuselage and flyers, everything. At that point, we shared a cell phone amongst 100 of us, because that's all we could get out. At that moment, and I was talking to my wife, I could taste the adrenaline in my mouth, and I was shaking. And I told her, I love you, I'm okay. And you could hear the fear in her voice when the phone rang at the house. And I just said, I'm staying. Then I didn't see her. I didn't talk to her until Friday.
That's amazing. You know, you mentioned something that I don't know anybody that hasn't been through. Some of the things you've been through would know: the taste of adrenaline in your mouth, actually being aware of an actual sensation.
Tastes like vanilla Coke. What's the taste like?
Because I don't think you and I have ever had that.
No, we never have, Mike.
But it's amazing when you talk about when the adrenaline rush, as it is, when that dies down, that is when you become more aware of exactly your surroundings. At what point in time, in the chronology, were you aware that this was a plane? Was that when it happened?
At 1:47 in the afternoon.
At 1:47, right. You said this had to be a plane that had done
right.
This, and you were pretty much just on adrenaline autopilot prior to that.
At approximately about 10:30, 11 o'clock, I looked up amongst the smoke and the 110 freeway from behind us, and I'm looking up there looking, and all of a sudden, I saw an American flag behind the actual burning smoke as it was going through. It was almost as if they flew the plane into our very fabrics of our of America, our very freedom. At that moment, I looked up, and there was a jet fighter that flew over me, and that was the prettiest thing I'd ever seen at the time.
Mm-hmm.
He just went over and waved his wings at me and said, basically, I'm here, guys, I'm here.
We had a similar experience, I think, all of us in New York, when we saw the jet fighters fly over the city for the first time. It's a reassuring feeling when you realize that we're on the case, and the country is on the case.
And if you could, for 1 second, allow yourself to let your guard down and tell us, how great is it at the end of the day, in one of the worst days in America's history, though, how great is it that you directly affected the lives of people, and that people are alive because of your heroism and your bravery? Have you stopped to contemplate how great that really is?
No.
Well, why don't you stop for a second right now and think about it? Because I'm telling you, it is great. And I know that you guys have gotten plenty of accolades, but I don't think people have heard the true stories of what's going on at the Pentagon. And I'm blown away by what I'm hearing.
The medals were an honor. I turned them down. I didn't want them. My reward is when this woman had held me in the hospital, Sheila Moody, held me in the hospital and said I was a guardian angel. And she's already gone through 6 skin grafts. I waited 2.5 hours for her to be wrapped, and that's my reward.
How's she doing now?
She's doing wonderful. It was her second day at work.
Oh, God.
And how great is that? How fulfilling is that? Does that let you know that you made the right choice with your life, with your choices, with your career, when you can go see this woman and say, she's alive because of me?
No.
At least for this part of her life.
I guess it's funny, I don't even think that way. Just to see her smile is fulfillment. It has nothing to do with, hey, I saved your life, or else. It has nothing to do with that. It's to see this woman smile every day. That's enough.
That's why I would make such a bad hero, because I would constantly be walking up to these people and going, excuse me, where's the S on my chest?
You know, I want to ask you, Sergeant, I'm not going to ask everybody this this question, but I'm going to ask you this. You just handed me a bracelet here that that said Lieutenant, is that Lieutenant Commander Dennis M. Johnson?
Lieutenant Colonel.
Lieutenant Colonel.
He was one of the many that I had the honor of bringing out.
Yeah, and we all noticed when U.S. Air...
What is this plane that is flying overhead right now?
We were here yesterday, and I'll point out some of the DPS guys were telling me that that's the flight plan of some of the commuter planes for U.S. Air flight right directly over the Pentagon.
Exactly.
It kind of amazes a lot of people that happened.
Spooky.
But you were talking about Colonel Dennis M. Johnson.
Right. Colonel Johnson's wife, Joyce, had given me that 2 weeks ago, and I told her I would honor her and her husband by wearing that. That's KIA Killed in Action bracelet for here at the Pentagon, and I had the honor of bringing him out later on in the recovery efforts.
I'm gonna follow up. I'm gonna continue the question that I was gonna ask you before we mentioned Lieutenant Colonel Johnson, and I'm gonna ask you this because I think you're the right guy to ask for this. What would you say to the individuals that that may have thought that this attack on 9/11 2001 was something that was going to diminish our resolve as a country? What would you say to the people that that would not believe that we would be able to bounce back from something like this? What did 9/11 do to the military? What did it do for the United States of America?
Well, they were sadly mistaken, because what they did is woke a sleeping giant. And there's many men like me in the military that believe in the brotherhood, and we're going to make sure that our fallen comrades will be not revenged, but taken care of and will never be forgotten.
That's right. Amen.
All right.
Amen. We got a high five for the two sergeants.
Oh, man.
Can I tell you something?
What a pleasure it is to talk to you guys.
I'm no fag, and I know you guys got that, you know, don't ask, don't tell thing. But I just want to tell you.
Balls, fag, you're using them all for that.
I just want to tell you. The berets are dreamy. I love the fact that the Army's brought back the berets.
I don't think they're going to let you have them, though. I don't think they're going to let you have the berets.
Notice that Chris went back to get his beret after you were complimenting.
Yeah.
And I also want to say, you know, we're up in Philadelphia. We're here in New York. We're in a couple of stations here in Washington today. I want to, is there anybody you guys, Ed Bonilla, and also Sergeant Brayman, anybody you want to say hello to as we, yeah, this is the Pentagon show that we're doing today. Anybody that you'd like to mention before we let you go?
My wife, Samaria, my three little girls, Lauren, Courtney, and Miranda. Love them very much. I'm working now on a special program called the YES Program, Youth Educational Services Program, where I'm going across America and teaching kids not to be afraid, and to educate themselves so they won't be afraid. And I go around and tell them the story and tell them how wonderful it was for them to send pictures and poems and songs that helped heal us as we were during our recovery aspect. There was a time where I couldn't walk up a flight of stairs because I had chemical pneumonia. I was prognosed with it that Friday evening, so my lungs looked like I was a 20-year smoker. From the toxins that I took in.
Hello.
Was that the first thing we related to, then? The ideas of a 20-year
smoker. All right.
I quit 3 weeks ago.
That's the first thing we have in common with these guys.
Well, Ed, anybody you'd like to say hello to?
I like to say hello to my wife, Lourdes, and my two daughters, Emily and Kimberly. And I also like to dedicate, you know, this interview.
Well, no, he's your wife? Chris is saying that Sergeant Bonilla is your wife?
Are you two pals? Are you?
Yeah,
guys,
we've known each other.
Your buddy's okay.
Yeah. All right, I'm sorry. Who else did you want to say hi to?
And I wanted to dedicate this to all the co-workers that passed away and all the ones that survived with the injuries, and also to a very close friend of mine who passed away during the attack, Jose Calderon.
You want to walk away from a broadcast site and realize that the state of the country is strong, all you have to do is talk to these guys for about half an hour, and I'm going to be bouncing back to the car on my way out of here.
Amen.
Fantastic.
You know, if I wasn't so needed by my country, you know, I'm an American treasure. If I wasn't so needed every day to lead this show, I would almost want to join the Army.
Hi. Hi, me. Okay, Jerry.
Don, I do have something for you and Mike. I can get you within another 24 hours. I have a beret that I would like to give you.
That we would love.
Oh, fantastic. You know,
that we would love.
I just need your size.
We'll treasure that.
You know, these Department of Defense police officers, you know.
We're going to be talking to them later on.
I can't say enough good about them. You know, they were one of the first responders to get in there. They stuck by the entire time, regardless of the smokes in the hallway. And they were standing there regardless, waiting to be relieved, but they didn't get relieved, and they kept going in and out. And I'm proud to know that they served with me and not for us. They serve with me as a brother.
Very gracious.
We'll pass that along to them.
Very gracious.
Thank you.
Both sergeants. Thank you very much.
Sergeant Chris Brayman, also Sergeant Ed Bonilla, two of the guys that were there. And American heroes, it's so great to talk to you. It makes me feel good. And then the state of the country is strong talking to you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, guys.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. And I salute you.
I salute you, sir.
There you go. We salute back. All right.
They had a buzz for me.
We will.
Hey.
There they go.
Ed smiles a little more, Sergeant Brayman. Don't get him mad.
There they go.
I'm not going to call him a cook again. Ed, don't call you a cook, right?
Absolutely not. Tell you, Mike, if I wasn't a national treasure, I'd join the Army. Today I joined the Army, except I'm so soft. I would get kicked out in the first week.
Wait, Sergeant Brayman's going to say something else? What? He was going to say something.
I would be the private pile. I know I'd be private pile.
No, we're still on the air. Yeah, we're still on the air.
You want to say something on the air or off the air?
You asked about being a... I came in the Army as an infantry cook.
Yeah.
I went to Iraq, Turkey, and Yugoslavia as a 50-16 saw machine gunner.
Huh?
From that time, it changed my life in the direction that I'd be going into spring flops.
Sure. But you can still whip off a nice little burra blanc or something.
I can do a creme brulee.
He's no ordinary cook.
I can kill him and screw him.
All right. Hey, a pleasure meeting both of you guys, the dueling sergeants. Lisa, well, we have some of our DPS guys coming up next.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to talk to the Department of Protected Services down here at the Pentagon. A lot of the guys, that were here on that day, the canine guys.
First response team in many cases.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and they're, some of those guys are responsible for us being down here today, and we couldn't be more honored.
Well, all I can say is we've been here for over an hour, and I'm blown away.
Yeah. I'm not only blown away, I feel differently than I thought I would feel. On a day like this, you hear the stories. Yes, it's a time to remember the people that we lost on that day, but I feel energized. I really do. I feel energized about this country and the fight on terrorism because you've got guys like this. I mean, mm-hmm. to know that guys like Ed Bonilla and Sergeant Brayman are on the front line, it makes me feel good.
And the stories that we've heard, I've only talked to three guys thus far, but each of them has had a story that I don't think has been told from the Pentagon perspective.
Exactly.
And again, no disrespect to New York.
No, not at all.
But we've heard over and over again the stories about the people in the Twin Towers that were jumping and all of this.
Yeah.
You know, it's important to note that this tragedy affected New York, D.C., and the part in Pennsylvania where the plane went down.
Yeah.
And I'm goddamn proud to be here today.
I am too, yeah.
As a Washingtonian at the Pentagon, hearing these stories that I didn't know happened.
That's what we're here for. We've got a lot more of that coming up. We're going to talk with a lot more people and people that were both impacted by the tragedy and people that saved lives on that day.
And Mike, I'm sorry, I can't control my Saudi language. I'm like you. I'm just...
I understand this.
I'm revved up. You know what I mean?
Revved up, yes.
It's not like 9/11 a year ago,
right,
where we were both shell-shocked, no pun intended, like everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I mean, being here,
I thought it would be a
there
day.
There is an excitement.
I thought really when we came down here today, I thought that it would be a day where it would be a tough broadcast to do because of the sadness of the day. Yes, this is a sad day. It is commemorating in my opinion, the most tragic event in our history. But at the same time, just the strength that you get by sitting here and even talking to one of these guys, I sure hope that's coming down the line through the radio and the people are able to feel good about this country after today. And that is really an important thing to do. We're looking back so much on this day of tragedy. We're recapping so much that happened. They do that, but at the same time, I feel strength from these guys. These are the gutsy heroes, the guys that...
Look at these guys. I mean, right now, you know what it is? It's like when you go into the circus and you look in the mirror,
mm-hmm.
we got the two sergeants in front of us and you and me.
Yes.
It's like right over there, you know what that is?
We're the funhouse mirror.
We're looking at everything that is good and right. Like over here, looking at us.
We're the DJs.
Big, fat, lazy DJs saying, please, please, save our lives.
Hoping that maybe some of them will rub off on us.
Yeah. Save our lives. Well, they are.
It's an honor to be here.
They are the heroes. And, Army TV, what do you guys want to plug?
You want to come up, anybody from our Army TV want to come up and say hi?
Army TV?
Are you guys just hanging out? Anybody wants to? That's what we're here for.
I mean,
we're here to talk to you guys.
They've been here all day now. Now, what the hell? What the hell is Army TV?
Well, we're getting a pen.
Is it like a cable channel? What
thank
is
you,
it?
Thank you for that. Appreciate
you. Do
that.
You show porn?
Oh, stop it.
What is Army TV?
Actually, we're part of the U.S. Army Visual Information Center. Do a lot of graphics and...
You guys were busy here today, getting ready for the observance today. And what do you think? How do you feel about the events of today? You happy with everything?
Well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Take a lot of hard work when not only rebuilding the Pentagon, but a whole other crew of people came in. Everything you see out here for the last week and a half, they've been out here all hours of the day and night.
It's pretty amazing. Now, are you guys are regular Army? Is that correct?
Yes.
You're all in the military. You look around at the cooperation, and I'm going to ask you this. I mean, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but to what do you owe this incredible...